Get down! What are you doing? Get down from there.
Forget it, engineer. Go home.
You're supposed to be setting a good example. Now, will you get back to your coffin immediately?
You can't stop me. You owe your job to me. Remember?
Get down or I'll shoot.
You can't. I'm the mayor.
Bex.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me, back from the dead, Sam Stepanenko for his birthday pick, the Big 5-0 pick.
Yes, and this is apropos for the Big 5-0.
Neither living nor dead.
Neither living nor dead.
And Trish Coughlin, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
And Sam, you picked a doozy. This was a rare find, and if I knew how hard it was going to be to find again, I would have stolen that VHS from wherever we rented it from back in, I'm guessing it was around 1994. I don't know. We probably discovered it a year or so later.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, but yeah, I'm like, what do I want to do? What do I want to do? I'm looking through a list of like sort of cult movies. I'm like, which one do I really feel I saw it? I'm like, text you, Cemetery Man. That is all.
and it's a toughie. It's like, if you want to get a DVD or Blu-ray on the secondary market, you're doing pretty good at $50.
Mm-hmm.
So this is gonna be a tough one to track down, but they are out there on Amazon and eBay and whatnot, and I think it's worth it.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's a truly a fun movie.
Yeah,
it's a strange, just if you get frustrated by like how some of the stuff sort of comes in and goes out and comes in and goes out because it's sort of meandering, just like lie in and let it wash over you.
Yeah, well, I mean, the American title is Cemetery Man. It's kind of a dumb title, but the Italian name is Della Morte, Della More, roughly translated to About Death, About Love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this movie is. You can't really fit this movie into a box. It's one of those really tough-to-market movies, and it sits on its own little island, which is kind of apropos for the entire theme of the film. But it is about death. It is about life. It's about the living death. It's about sex.
It's about society.
A lot of
society.
Sex.
I think there's a lot to say about psychology in this movie, as well as living in small towns, isolated small towns in Italy. Things that we're probably not going to understand because we're not Italian.
No.
And we don't live in a small town.
Or we definitely don't live in a small town. We live in a fucking cold town.
Oh.
Yes.
At least today. This week is just brutally cold, so if you hear my furnace kicking in, it's because I don't want to freeze my ass off doing this podcast.
No, we will die if it goes off.
Yeah, we don't want to get frostbite inside our own home.
Yes, let's just put it this way. With wind chill, it is about minus 35 degrees Celsius right now as we record this. So thanks for making the trek to the studio today.
Well, and for the Americans out there, minus 40 is when Celsius and Fahrenheit meet.
Mm-hmm.
So now that'll give you an idea of where we're at.
Yeah.
Yes. Cold as fuck.
Yes.
That's what the F stands for in Imperial. It's not Fahrenheit. It's fuck.
It's fuck.
It's cold as fuck.
Which is kind of funny watching this like Italian movie and I'm like going, oh, it looks nice there.
It does because it feels very, it's fall. It's a beautiful looking film.
Mm-hmm.
This is Dario Argento's assistant director for a few of his projects. And this was, I think, his first feature as a director. I think he'd done some other stuff as a director before this, but I think this was his first feature. It's a beautiful looking film. Absolutely. It's well composed, well shot. He's done some great stuff to great effect with fairly minimal budget.
Yeah, you can see the giallo influence on it for sure. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call this giallo. There's a certain flavor and form to it. And I think that's why like it is such a hard movie to categorize.
It's surrealist horror comedy.
Yeah. But it's like Edward Scissorhands in a way where it's really sad at the same time. It's like it's a very melancholy comedy horror. But the writing's so slick. Like, and that's where we're going to hit some roadblocks is, like, how do we make for a global audience without taking away that weird flavor? Like, the best I can compare this to, it is 1994's Mandy.
Yeah.
If you want to compare it to something modern where it's surreal and a little strange and you're not sure what it's trying to say, but you're really entertained by the message anyway.
Yes.
It's like an experience.
You can just enjoy this as a comedy on the surface, as a comedy zombie movie.
Yes.
But there's so many more layers to it than that. If you miss it, you'll still be entertained if you don't get what the underlying messages are. And this was, I think, my second watch, but the first time I watched it with Sam, way back whenever we watched it, it stuck with me this whole time. And that says something, especially on one watch, like to remember so much of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was watching. Well, yeah, I remember this part. I remember this part. Mm-hmm. I remembered enjoying it.
There's things I watched last week I don't remember with this kind of clarity. Yeah. This movie stays with you. And if you like a little weird, a little strange, a little offbeat type of
Little weird. There's bits that are a lot weird.
Well, considering the steady diet of weird that Sam and I used to be on as film goes. It's definitely high on the list. But
it's definitely high on the list, yes.
Oh, no, and I love weird. I exist on a steady diet of weird, but I still admit there's a lot of stuff here that's real weird.
This is like when you put it on a list of weird, it's right near the
top. There's House Sue elements to it, and that's a weird one, and I love that one.
Hard Rock Zombie's weird at times.
Yes.
Yeah, but more coherent.
Yes, there are some nonsensical bits, but for the most part, it's a coherent narrative.
There's bits.
It gets really strange when your main character of Francesco Della Morte, played by Rupert Everett, he's this, what the townsfolks call the engineer, but he's the guy who basically runs the local cemetery.
Yes.
Right away, we find out not everybody likes to stay dead. It takes about a couple of weeks, and then they might pop back up.
Seven days.
Except for the bus crash, and he said they're coming to life sooner than we thought.
Yeah, and maybe that increase of the dead rising represents his tenuous reality. Like, here's this guy who exists as the mundane. Like, shooting the dead is part of his job because he's too lazy to file the paperwork to get more people to look into whatever the fuck is going on.
Well, he's afraid they're going to close the cemetery and he's going to lose his job and his house.
Yeah, and that is also part of the problem because it's a small town. How else are you going to survive in this small town?
And it's also, there's also this part of it where it's, this is his job, this is his life, and there might be something out there, but like he's just lost all ambition to that as well. Like, he thinks about it, but then he doesn't do anything about it.
He's existing in isolation. And the few times he does venture into town, he's at best ignored or at worst made fun of.
Yeah.
They don't treat him well in town.
No. They make him sound like he's some sort of eunuch.
It's part of the story referencing his so-called impotency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then there's other bits too. Like part of it, like again, because he's stuck in this life. It's like he is a zombie. He's the walking dead. He's not really existing in life. He's just doing his job and that's, just doing that's whatever.
Part of the message in here is as his grasp on reality, if that's even what's happening, is starting to fracture and his life gets more chaotic, it seems like he's even getting more ignored and like inconsequential. Like, oh, there's all these deaths happening. Well, it can't be you.
No, he's always been sidelined to it as well. Like at one point, not to skip ahead, there's at one point in the movie where the police officer's like, oh, you've got a gun, good, you can defend yourself.
And he yells, it was me.
Yep. He just shot a bunch of people. He's the only other person with a gun in the building. He was on the floor. The killings happened. And the cop is still, oh, well, it can't be you. Thank goodness you have a gun to defend yourself.
I mean, it's fantastic. That was probably one of the funniest things in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, there's lots of
imagine how frustrated. You're like, I just shot a bunch of people.
The nurse annoyed me, so I shot her. The doctor annoyed me, so I shot her. The nun annoyed me, so I shot her.
Yeah, he becomes really, at that point, I'm like going, ooh, there's points in this movie where you're like, can I continue to follow this character and not just really hate him a lot? Rupert Everett does a lot here. He manages to cruise by on a lot of charm, but there's moments where I'm like going, oh, this asshole.
Yeah, he's just so disconnected from the world and any kind of moral substance about it, but yeah. He doesn't come off cold either. Like, he's
for most of the movie, yeah,
desperately seeking validation and affection.
Well, and as he loses,
it's right off the bat. I mean, and it happens fast, you know, love at first sight. And then there's this cyclic repetition of always making the wrong choices, which is something everybody can relate to when we make a bad decision and then we wind up doing it again. Like, it happens.
And the same woman is like a whole Groundhog Day thing. And it's sort of like going, this is your red flag, dude.
Yeah.
You should know this is a problem.
This woman keeps popping up as different people, but it's the same actors playing that role and always falling in love. And maybe there's this message of instant reincarnation. And he is existing in this weird little world, which, when you get to the credits, like, it, there's this snow globe that fades into, and makes it sound like this is this enclosed microcosm that he's never going to escape.
Yes.
Yeah, like, was this a purgatory of some kind?
Yeah, and Sam and I debated it the first time we saw it, and I think it's even less clear now that I've seen it again. At least back then, I think we both agreed, like, oh, he's in purgatory.
Yeah.
And now, like, how did we come to that conclusion? Yeah. I don't know.
We were much younger.
But yeah, like, I've seen it before too. And yeah, again, less clear, because you're like, well, there's other stuff upon repeat viewings. You're like, okay, there's that and that. And so that, but that doesn't line up. And it's sort of like, at the end, he's sort of isolated and can't get out. But you see a lot of other world out there. So you're like, what's happening there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a strange little movie. I love his conversations with death.
Yeah.
And you question, of course, whether or not that's
in his head or
not. Yeah.
Exactly. A lot of things you question whether or not they're happening in his head or if they're happening
in
reality. I mean, if it weren't for his assistant,
Nagi,
yes, who's wonderful.
Yes.
He's wonderfully entertaining for a character who can only say one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's this dramatic switch right at the end. I want to save it for later. But
for sure.
I'm not sure what that says either.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been mulling that, but I still don't know.
While we're here at this point, before we say go any further, there was a sequel in the works that might have explained an awful lot if it ever materialized.
Yeah, I think it was back in around 2011 he was developing it.
Yes. And there were updates as recently as 2015.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
It's 2020 now and no sight. And that's the thing, like, how do you greenlight this movie? Because, yes, it is a cult film, but it is a really, it's as cult as it gets, because it's a tiny cult, because there's very few people outside of Italy that probably are even aware of this movie. And it's the truly diehards that have found it and discovered it, and we discovered it by accident. We just like, oh, that's an interesting and dumb title, but we read that. You know, we always pick up a box art on Blockbuster or wherever we rented it from, and we'd take a quick read. Oh, that sounds bizarre. Let's check that out.
Let's watch that. Yes, actually, I think 1994. I think I was still working at the video store. No, 93 was when I left, so it would have been after. It would have been when we were living in Tuxedo. And
I think just as when it came out, but that's if we discovered it then right away. It might have been after we were there. But Sam and I were roommates at the time, I think, when we picked it up. And I don't remember if anybody else watched it with us. But
no, Mike and Rob wouldn't have watched it with us. No fucking way. We love you guys, but no. I can hear Mike's voice right now going, what the fuck are you watching?
Yeah, it's true. Well, that's inside all of our listeners who have no idea who Mike and Rob are, other than our former roommates.
Inside. That's a deep cut. Only a few people know.
For an audience of two who probably don't listen to us.
There we go. That's real cult.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the size of the audience that saw this movie.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Well, I mean, didn't we that one time it was Dickens was doing a thing?
Yeah. They were putting on a movie night, and they did play this. And I remember afterwards, the owner of Dickens was told me later, like, what the fuck was up with that movie?
Right.
So it still has a weird vibe for most people.
To get some context to that, the other movie was Dead Alive. So yeah, he got that one.
I told him, I'm like, well, one, you should have played the opposite direction. Yeah, you should have reversed the film night. But
yeah.
Yeah, they're very different movies. That's equally right. Weird, but very different.
Yeah, this movie was actually budgeted around $4 million. I'm not sure what it was in lira. Domestically, it opened at $22,500.
Oh, okay.
So not a lot. And basically, it grossed about $250,000. So, like, it didn't get distribution.
None.
No.
You know,
what
little it trickled out outside of Italy certainly didn't amount to much.
Which is really odd because it's one of those international co-productions of like France, Germany, and Italy, but it never seemed to really make it out of Italy in terms of like at least theatrical distribution.
Yeah, which is a shame. And I know Rupert Everett, the star of the film, had pushed. I don't know when he last brought it up, but he had pushed for an American remake of this film. For an English dub, I'm wondering if they shot it in the typical Italian way, like the Italian westerns and the giallo films were. It's just like, well, okay, we're attracting international stars over here, but just speak your language and we'll make it work. Yeah. So the dubbing feels pretty good for the most part.
It does, yeah.
Like, I'm guessing Rupert Everett is just dubbing over himself.
Well, you can watch it looks his like, mouth movements.
And it looks like it's English to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of the dialogue is overdubbed, like it's voiceover rather than...
Yeah, well, that's just typical. Italian style, at least at that time, is they'll dub you over in the international, just speak what you speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even then, like, he's telling the story as voiceover through a lot of the movie.
Oh, yeah. The narrative is voiceover, yeah. All right, well, I think that's a good setup. I'm going to play a really quick trailer here for you. I found some longer ones, but unfortunately either the sound kind of sucked or it was in a different language. So this one's a short one. There was a small release by some company called Shameless, but at least there's a company you can find this movie at.
Nice.
Hopefully, anyway. Here it is, Cemetery Man, Delamore from 1994.
I'm the watchman of the Bufalora Cemetery.
My name's Francesco Della Morte.
I don't know how the epidemic started. All I know is that some people, on the seventh night after their death, come back to life.
Is it true what they say, that the dead come back to life?
With your consent, I'd like to marry Nagi.
Not as long, dear, as I've got a breath in my body.
We'll fix that right away.
Stop killing the dead. If you don't want the dead coming back to life, why don't you just kill the living? Are you listening to me?
Don't you believe me?
No.
Tough.
Told you it was quick.
Yep.
But at least gives you a little idea of the tone of this film, I think. All right, Delamore, a.k.a. Cemetery Man from 1994, was based on the novel by Tiziano Sclavi. This movie was basically a proto-version of his strip Dylan Dog. It was a very popular Italian comic book character and has maintained his popularity for the last 30 years. I think he's passed away now, but this was the prototype. And Rupert Everett is how the character appears. He very much looks like Rupert Everett from this film.
Nice.
So that's Dylan Dog in a punch. And if that sounds a little familiar, yeah, there was an American movie that did a shitty job adapting that comic book. It's okay.
No, I haven't seen it, so...
Okay. It's probably on Netflix or some
streaming
service.
I've heard of it, but I think I've passed by it. I never watched it.
I've minimal experience with Dylan Dog through the comic shop, but I knew enough about it that I'm like, oh, I want to check this out. So I would call it like their version of John Constantine. Okay. I would love to see that crossover if that ever happened. A screenplay was by Gianni Romoli, directed by Michele Suave. And he was Dario Argento's assistant director, as I mentioned. So he comes from a good pedigree as a giallo director. He worked on things with like Demons and Phenomena with Dario. So.
And Phenomena is really good.
Yeah, it's definitely a great film. Starring Rupert Everett as Francesco Della Morte. And I think he's the only one we really talked about in this movie that in a prior episode, and that was way back in episode 24, my favorite episode.
My best friend's wedding.
That's right. And you can currently, well, it's the last thing you could catch him in was the TV series in The Name of the Rose. Francois Hadji Lazzaro was Nagi, and he's in a couple of my foreign favorites, Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Yes.
Nice.
And City of Lost Children.
Oh, wow.
I got all giddy. I'm like, oh, we need to do one of those. I'm like, no, we don't.
No. That's just it. I like them so much.
You just can't touch them.
Can't touch them. And even this one's going to be a toughie. But we'll give it a go. Anna Falchi played basically that character, she. They just credit her as she because she's the love interest of Francesco that keeps dying and resurrecting his different characters along the way. And he keeps falling in love with her over and over and over again. And she's always fucking psycho in the weirdest and wonderful ways.
Well, yeah, literally fucking psycho.
At times. Like when she first shows up in the film, she gets horny about death. Like, she's got a real necromantic thing going on.
His pickup line is, we have an ossuary, and she gets all excited.
Yeah,
an ossuary.
Believe it or not, that was a real ossuary. I do. Just made that scene that much creepier.
Yep.
There was a crew member who got in trouble for stealing bones from the ossuary.
Oh, well, he did wind up bringing them back because weird shit was happening.
Yes. That's what I meant by getting in trouble.
Yes. So, you know, don't be stealing
bones from
there. Don't be stealing dead people.
No.
I can't believe I had to say that on the show, but don't be stealing dead people.
Some stuff just sometimes has to be said because apparently it hasn't been
said at the same time. I'm really happy I got to say those words.
Yes.
Mickey Knox was the Marshal Stranero, and he was in a little film called Godfather 3. Anybody heard of that?
It sounds familiar.
Yeah.
In the back of my head somewhere.
Fabiano Formica was Valentina Scannarotti.
Okay.
I'll just stick with the first name. The Italian character names are worse than the Italians that are playing them. But Fabiano was in something I kind of want to check out, an Italian anthology horror film called High Death.
Ooh.
And so I kind of want to check it out because it's just a cool title.
Yes.
And that was actually from 2018, so that was fairly recent. So maybe we'll do that on 31 Days of Horror this year. Who knows?
Nice.
Clive Reesh was the Doctor Versace, and he was on the Rome TV series as Tyro, the HBO series from a few years ago.
Okay.
Barbara Cupisti was Magda. She was in another Italian movie, a Fulci movie, Lucio Fulci movie from 82 called The New York Ripper, which is actually on my shelf and I've never watched
it. Nice. There you go.
I think you bought it for me.
I think I might have.
Yeah. Anton Alexander was Franco, and he was in Exodus, Gods and Kings back in 2014, so you might remember that movie. And Alessandro Zamitio was Claudio.
Claudio. Oh, no, Claudio. I have to know if Claudio loved me. No,
he was apparently
Claudio.
Buried on his motorcycle.
Yes.
Which I had to wonder about. Like, was he just, like, so burnt up he was attached to it? I don't know what happened there either,
but
it's just part of the weirdness of this film.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was just there to set up some really fun visuals, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah, well, Claudio had taken the mayor's daughter, Valentina, out for a ride after Nagi puked on her.
Because he gets nervous
talking
people.
To women.
Yeah.
And that's interesting, too, because Nagi's the assistant to Francesco at the cemetery. So he's basically the other cemetery man.
Yeah.
But he's a simple man. He really doesn't say anything, and it's just weird noises, basically. It's one noise.
He's Hodor.
Nah. Yeah. But at least, for some reason, Francesco still understands what he's saying, and really, Francesco understands him as a whole.
It's a Groot and Rocket syndrome.
It kind of is, yeah. I like the characterizations of him, like where you've got Francesco, who's really out to find this carnal love, which is very self-destructive for him.
Yes.
Where Nagi wants it too, but it's very romantic. Sweet and romantic. Yeah. And he's not looking to take any sexual favors or anything. He's just happy to watch television with that person he cares for. Thankfully, the
or
person,
play her music.
Or play her music or whatever. And it's very romantic. And it's a good thing he wasn't out looking for anything because she was just a head.
Yes. But a head that could move around, that visual of her following along the ground is just a head.
I mean,
you have to see it.
You could get pervy with that if you want. Leave that up to you, you sick bastards.
But I don't, but you're right. I don't believe that of him.
No, I don't believe that of him.
Because Valentina's actually, she's quite happy and content. Yeah,
and like, even when she's puked on, she still thought he was sweet. Like, she's not really offended by it or disgusted by it. She understands him.
Yeah, she's quite kind.
Yeah.
Except to her father.
Yeah. Although, I don't know. There seems to be a whole lot of stuff happening in this town. I get it. Like, I don't know. There's stuff happening.
Well, and considering later on where the father is wanting to exhume her just for political re-election motivations.
So, I wouldn't be nice to that guy either. No,
he's not cool. And in the end, he dies too. Everybody dies. Everybody you see in this movie dies in some unique way, and then is resurrected, and then dies again in some unique way.
Well, that's not that unique. He shoots them in the head mostly.
Yeah,
well,
he did shoot him in the head, yeah. But with one of the best lines.
And I opened the movie with this.
Oh, nice.
I opened our episode with this.
Oh, but we got to keep that line. He's like, you're supposed to set an example. Get back in your coffin.
That was my favorite line in the movie.
Oh, I love it.
Outside
so
of the poem at the end, which I will end the podcast with.
That's one of the most brilliant things.
There are so many great lines in this movie, and if you're not paying attention, you will miss them.
Yeah.
A lot of them are really quite witty.
If you're a fan of like good written dialogue, this movie has gotten spades.
And it's translated from Italian, and it's still funny.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how much funnier it would be in Italian.
Right?
And I think sometimes, even though it's a good and a deliberate line, because there's this kind of flat, melancholy tone, the humor doesn't land as well as it should because it's there.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny, but you don't quite react in that way.
Yeah.
And it's weird. This movie's really, you recognize it is funny, but this movie's manipulates you in some really clever ways.
One of my favorite bits of the whole movie is when he walks outside and it's a beautiful sunny day and he's like, oh, the weather's rotten again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell?
And it was there to tell you a little bit about his personality, that he's a gloomy man.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he spends a lot of time underneath that shower. And it's like, you could tell that's probably where he just likes to be, because he's like, this is where I feel comfortable here.
Yeah, close to that statue of death.
Yes.
They must go through a lot of water.
Yeah.
And then, the bit where they're putting barbed wire on the cemetery.
Oh, that was great.
He's like, what are you doing? Are people trying to get in? No, but sometimes they try to get out.
Like, everything this guy does seems pretty dodgy, and nobody bats an eye.
Nope.
No, there's a great bit where the inspector's asking me, he says, your car was seen in town, and he's like, that's impossible. Nobody can drive that car but me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Well, so it can't be you.
It can't be you. It can't be you. Yeah.
He still thinks it's Nagi. He's like, Nagi can't roller skate.
He killed seven people there. At least that was the first time where he kills some people deliberately, just goes out on a vengeance spree and shoots everybody. This is after he has a chat with Death, who's really annoyed with him.
Yeah.
And Death has basically said,
stop killing the dead. They're mine. If you don't want the dead coming back to life, why don't you just kill the living? Shoot them in the head. Are you listening to me?
Quit killing the dead. Why don't you kill the living for a change?
Yes.
The head. If you don't want the dead coming back to life. He starts off killing them by shooting them in the head. And sure enough, those guys don't come back.
And he says, like, I'm trying to get ahead of my work.
It's a very justification.
I totally get that.
But, when that scene happened, at least at the time, they don't play with it enough, but at the time you might think that it was a dream because it happens while He's in bed, and you think dreaming about killing these kids. And then the next scene, the inspector's going, "Hey, did you kill some kids?"
Yeah, that was beautifully set up. But you're right; they need a little more.
I felt like they should have just played with you a little bit more with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Let that linger a little bit, so you can go, "Oh, did that happen or didn't it?" And then when things or evidence happens, and maybe we should see that reaction, we're like, "Oh, did I do that?"
Yeah. Well, at that point, too, what was really funny was I know I've seen Franco and I get it, but it was sort of at that point where he's talking on the phone and then all of this happens and it seems all in his head. I'm like, oh, my God, is Franco really his friend? Does Franco exist?
Like, yeah, we do see Franco once when he has to go to the office.
Yes.
But, and it doesn't like, I don't know. It doesn't feel like Franco's acting with familiarity. I think it's just general friendliness, maybe.
Yeah. Like, is he on the phone to Franco? Does he think Franco's his friend? And he thinks, because it also doesn't look. And then Franco in the hospital says, "I don't know you. I don't know who you are."
Yeah.
I think that he doesn't. He thinks this relationship has happened and Franco is his best friend, but it's never been like that.
Yeah. It's just this guy he has to do business with occasionally.
Yep.
And it's really Francesco's only social interaction.
Right. So he thinks it's a friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I was going to remake territory real quickly here, briefly.
Yes.
Is,
well, that's kind of what we're here for.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Is it starts off with he's on the phone with Franco when the movie opens.
He has to shoot. Yeah. Right?
And then there's that scene where he does have to go into the office and meet Franco. I would do away with that scene just to really establish that they do know each other, but it's only over the phone. And they've talked lots over the phone. And that's where he develops sort of this feeling that Franco's his only real friend because he's the only person he ever talks to beyond Nagi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right?
I think that's one thing I would change is make that.
I would do away with that too, just so there's always that question in the back of your head. Because when they meet, I feel like it undermines that scene when they actually, when Francesco visits Franco in the hospital.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. And accuses him and gets mad because you stole my murders.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why are you taking credit for my murders?
Yes. He actually says, "You stole my murders."
Yeah. Which I think is brilliant.
Yeah. And I think they sort of intended that office scene to be like that because Franco goes away and then there's just like this disembodied hand and says, "Here's an M3 form." Because like it seemed like he was yelling from the outside, "I need an M3 form." Like, I don't know. He seems imaginary. It's a very Fight Club scenario.
Yeah. But he's not obviously not imaginary because he does show up in the hospital. But certainly the relationship is different on either side.
Ooh, I would have it where he does talk on the phone to Franco, but then you sort of realize that the phone's not attached to anything.
Well, it seems like an obvious gag, though.
I know, but I like it.
Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a way to manipulate it so where Franco becomes aware of what's going on and is like, I don't understand why there's the thought that Franco is the killer in the first place.
Yeah.
Because he confessed, because he murdered his wife and daughter and then confessed to the other murders.
Oh. Yeah.
And I kind of have a fix for that. I think that they do talk on the phone. Mm-hmm. Right. I think they're both lonely, desperate people.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Living in isolation.
This guy's unhappy with his wife and his marriage and is unhappy being a father.
Yeah.
And Francesco's lonely, right? Desperate for any type of human contact.
Yeah.
And so they've developed a bond over the phone.
Right? Yeah. But they've never actually met or at least acknowledged that they're the person they've been talking to when they do have a physical meeting.
Yeah. Yeah,
it'd be interesting if, like, you're actually talking to this guy and confessing the things you've done, and that's why Franco takes credit for
exactly
those.
That was where I was going. Is that that Francesco tells Franco, "Well, I did murder those kids in the park, and I did burn down that building."
Yeah, right? Or at least a desire to.
Yeah,
like if he's not confessing to it, maybe he's confessing his desire to wanting to do something. Because, you know, everybody's had that, you know, your neighbor's out at 6 a.m. mowing his lawn, oh, I could kill that guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's had those casual thoughts, but never really wanted to do anything.
It's
you know?
Fleeting and it goes away because you're sane person.
Yes, exactly. You're a sane person. And we are not dealing with sane people.
No.
I think this whole town is insane, but it all is. I'm not even sure if any of them are really there. Like, cause this could be an entire purgatory situation.
Or it could just simply be that he is completely mad and this is all happening in his head.
Yeah. And that's what I love about this film is you don't have the answers at the end.
No.
It just keeps building more and more questions. And
And in the end, he's even further isolated because Nagi's also dies.
Yeah. Well, did he?
No.
Yeah.
Did he? Gets up at the end.
Yeah, he gets up. Oh, and he throws the gun into the pit.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Like, which I like that idea.
He doesn't want Francesco shooting him, thinking he resurrected from the dead.
Not just that. Nagi's probably sitting there going, like, I think I want Nagi to be the most sane person in this movie.
He is.
Yeah, well,
he knows this is bad.
I mean, at the end, I think he ends that way.
Yeah.
Like, I think he was all the way along.
Yeah, it's very possible. Did,
he knew what was kind of going on. Like, I believe that when it came to, like, the disembodied head, it was there. Like, it wasn't talking. He just wanted it there. Like, I don't know.
I mean, it did fly out of the television.
And literally flew.
And bite the mayor.
Which is the Hao Su thing.
Yes.
I'm like, well, did it happen? Did it happen? I mean, if you keep a rotting head in your shot out television, I'd question your sanity a little bit.
Yep. The rotting thing, yeah, that'd be so... I felt so bad for him because I'm like, how are you going to, like, deal with this as this moves on?
Mm-hmm. And they address it in the movie, and I loved that. Like, it stinks down here.
Right? Yeah. She was going a bit off.
She's going a bit off. Like, they definitely acknowledge the fact that she is going to deteriorate and quickly.
I mean, did he put her head in the television because Francesco accidentally shot the television?
Oh, for sure.
So it really was the only thing on?
Yeah. That's... Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like, I love the visual joke of that. I'm like, well, it's the only thing on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's so many really fun visuals like that in the movie, too. Like, it's so well thought out visually.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of get the feeling that their director was like, it's very Jackie Chan-ish. He's like, well, I want this. Write a story around it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And that's sometimes why the story does get a little disconnected, I think.
Yeah.
Is because he wanted certain things and then had to make the story work around those things he wanted too.
You do sometimes get the idea that they've thought of the visuals first.
Yeah. I want a head in a bright, like a veil wandering along the ground. Oh, I tell you, just watch this movie just for that visual. It's so bonkers and I loved it so much.
It's probably got one of the most erotic sex scenes I've ever seen in any movie.
Yeah.
And oddly dark and beautiful at the same time.
Well, I like the idea where she kind of comes of the first iteration of her.
Yeah.
Comes along, is like going, oh no, I had no secrets from my husband, so this is kind of why I'm doing it here. Yeah. I'm not going to hide this from him.
Yeah, yeah. She wants to be upfront about it with her husband, so they fuck on his grave.
Yeah. And
Cowboy.
Yeah, and I somewhat admire that.
With the wings framing her back in its really angelic way.
Yeah, again, beautifully shot. Right?
Yeah, very beautifully shot.
Yeah,
totally get it. But then her husband comes back at the most inopportune time.
Yeah. Oh, man. And there's this darkness to that because the dead husband rises and bites her and she passes out or something and everybody thinks she's dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he puts her in the ossuary that she really loved and they first made out at. And then later when he visits her, she rises to whatever self-monologue he's saying and replying to him.
Yeah.
And then he does what he does when anybody rises from the dead. He shoots her in the head. Okay, dead person back to being dead. And then she rises again later on.
Yep.
And with all those roots and stuff coming out of her, it makes me think there's something with the plant life.
There is, and the director's actually gone on record saying that the roots are why these people are rising.
Yeah, right. So whatever is with the plant life here is what's causing the dead to rise.
Oh yeah, they've put a cemetery in a very bad place.
Yeah, apparently. They're mandrake roots.
Right.
Right, so the mandrake is...
Ooh, witchy.
Yeah.
Witchy. Oh, yeah, well, we covered that in... what was the episode with Rutger Hauer and... what's her face?
Oh,
Flesh and Blood.
Flesh and Blood.
Flesh and Blood, where they talk about the mandrake root.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got these magical tree roots, and she rises again. And then he realizes, oh, shit, she wasn't dead the first time.
Nope. And she was his first murder.
Yeah, so that was the first murder.
Yeah, and to be fair...
Which probably fractured his mind greatly after
Here's
that.
The dumb part of it, too. The doctor says, well, no, she was bitten, but the bite didn't bite her. She died of fear. No.
What kind
You're
of
a bad doctor.
Yeah, what kind of shit doctor are you?
Okay, but this is the same doctor who almost went ahead with cutting off his member because he asked to have it to be made. Yeah.
This second version of her.
which there's a lot of
falls in love with him, but is frightened of basically sex.
Yes.
And penises. She won't say the word penises, but she's like, well, I'm attracted to you because I heard you don't have one.
Or you don't, you can't use yours.
So this safe love for her, right?
Yeah.
I think she was the mayor's assistant.
Yeah, she was.
She was the mayor's assistant.
The new mayor's assistant.
The new mayor's assistant. The second mayor.
The new rapist mayor assistant.
Yes. Yeah. Who later on, we find out, raped her. But she kind of liked it. So the second time,
yeah,
she did it willingly.
Yeah, fucking dumb.
So she's like, well, so I kind of like it now. So I'm going to marry him instead of you.
Oh, and I still love you. Nothing's changed. What the fuck is this
Thankfully,
shit?
Thankfully, the doctor couldn't go through with cutting off his penis.
Yes, yes. He just gives him an injection.
That was what he was willing to do.
That lasts a month.
Yeah, yeah. It was basically Novocaine'd his dick.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah, see, he makes bad decisions.
Yes, that's why I said there's this
terribly bad
cyclic pattern with him of making bad decisions about this woman, and he keeps making the same decision over and over again, and I'm sure there's some psychological thing that describes, but I don't know what that would be. But,
well, no, it's like most people. Let's be honest. We've made the same bad decision a few times.
Sure.
it's just being human. His is just really up to 11.
Yeah. Isn't there a mythical Thanatos, which is also death, that is a cyclic thing? Anyway,
yeah.
Somebody else can look into that.
Yes.
But I think I'm kind of onto something here. So he meets her again.
Yes.
And she's like a college roommate with somebody.
College student.
And he's just trolling around in his car and he's... Well, what are you thinking? What do you wish? Oh, I wish you'd fall in love with me. He's like, what makes you think I haven't fallen in love with you already? And so, yeah, even though he had Novocaine dick, he was able to get going. And then he finds out she's a hooker and just used him and... Like he's supposed to pay the roommate,
and she keeps upping it up. So, well, she said she loved me. That's another 50 lira.
Yeah.
Oh my god! And then I kept thinking about that. I'm like, when they first meet, she's like, "Can you give us a ride home? It's not far." And I'm like, "Going, if it's not far, hoof it." That's just me. Like, if it's not far, then why the fuck do you want to ride? I mean, that should have been his first clue.
Yeah. Should you tell him you want him to pay up front?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're bad prostitutes because you should get the money first.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Now, he takes the extreme reaction there.
Oh, yeah. Dumbass reaction.
And, like, murders them.
As you do. But at that point, he'd had quite the list already.
So. Yes. Well, no, they were only his second spree, as it were.
Wasn't that after he killed the seven kids?
Yeah, so that was...
Yeah, he's already detached at this point.
Yes, he's now continuing his pattern. This is his second sort of break with sanity.
Now, we've got to go back to Claudio, too. So, Valentina, after she had got puked on by Nagi, hopped on a motorcycle... with Claudio and his crew of motorcyclists.
Yeah.
And they're just going for a joyride.
Ragamuffins.
And they get run over by a bus.
Oh, yeah. And then the bus goes over a cliff.
A busload of scouts.
And nuns.
And nuns that go over the cliff. So all the bikers are dead. It's really gross, too, because we get to see head pops and the whole bit.
Ooh, yeah,
It's gross, and I'm not even sure how they knew who belonged to what by the end of it.
Right? Yes.
It's pretty grotesque. So later on, Claudio is resurrected. They call them returners in this movie.
Yes.
Returns, crashing out on his motorcycle. And this is during another sex scene, I do believe. Or at least a...
No, because the other girl who was in love with him is there mourning over his grave because
right. Okay, yeah. So there's another girl who thought she was Claudio's girlfriend. Yeah, pining over and she hops on the bike and they go away for a little bit.
Which has got to be irritating when he's like, damn it, now, like, usually they're just walking. It's much easier then.
And you think they kind of got away with it, but later on he does find them. Shoots Claudio in the head, but accidentally shoots her in the head at the same time. Oops.
But at that point, you know, she's going to come back. And honestly, if you can't let go, Life's going to be real hard for you, lady.
There's a lot of drama that happens around this cemetery.
Yes.
Yeah. And she said,
which
I just
probably
need
why
to
they
know,
call it Cemetery Man in yeah. North America.
I just need to know if he loved me. I'm like going, yeah. And then you let him eat you. No, you apparently didn't need to know that. You just need to know if he loved you. Like, why does this shit keep changing? Yeah. I got very mad at her. A number of times. I didn't call her a dumb cow, but I'm like going, man, just the emotions.
Yeah, like
running rampant in this
everybody
movie.
In this town falls in love so easily.
Oh yes. My
so
god! Quickly. And when they do, it's like
And she came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, and we don't really see her until the funeral for Claudio, and then we see that little plot line start up.
And his mom is mad because he's been promised the mayor's daughter. Well, both are dead, so yeah. Good luck at that.
In a way, it's almost like it's a lot of sketches with the same characters.
It really is. That's what I was feeling. Like, it feels meandering. Like, there's several different plots that happen in the course of this movie.
Yeah, and I feel like you can set these little threads up a lot sooner and quicker, so when they do happen,
it's like part of the story.
Yeah, it feels like it's part of the story instead of just being thrust upon you.
Yes.
And then you get a little bit better payoff. And you get a little bit of better sense of the town and the people who live in it if you're being introduced to them much earlier on in the film.
Yeah, and it's funny because the whole movie's almost like it's a parody of sort of that stereotypical Italian passion.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, ooh, you are beautiful. I fall in love with you.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Which, you know, in the 70s, that was a big deal.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, it's definitely
even into the 80s with Italian cinema.
Yeah, it's very much a stereotype, and I think that's part of what they're poking fun at.
Sure. Yeah, it's certainly, I think, for the most part, is a commentary on the Italian giallo as well as the Italian romance films.
Yeah. Now, how do we make that for an international audience?
Yeah, so let's try to figure this out, because I like a lot of the jokes, and I kind of want to keep most of that in there.
Oh, the jokes are great.
You know, the general structure of the film. And I think that's with the interactions with the other characters. I think if we can flesh those characters out a bit, I don't just not much. You need to introduce these characters a little sooner. You do at least get a sense that it is a small town. Everybody knows everybody. Francesco knows the inspector. Well, he's probably inspecting any kind of mysterious death or any
he's
kind
the
of
only,
death.
He's probably he's the probably only the detective only, in town.
Yeah, there's probably a police force of like three people, and he's the only one that deals with the murders and whatnot. In fact, he probably does the store theft, right?
Yep.
Like, if there's any kind of crime that isn't easily provable, he has to go and investigate it. You don't ever see him more than one. He's like literally the only guy.
Yeah,
he is. And I mean,
I get the feeling there's only one doctor in town too.
Yes. Who's not very good?
Not very good at all. And yeah, I mean, everybody knows about sort of what
were those hedge clippers?
I don't.
They
kind of
looked like
those
it. Yeah.
Or bolt cutters. I think they were bolt cutters because it was a long handle with the short scissors.
It was, but it's like got the snippy bit where I think you can like do like kind of fine tune stuff on like hedges, like make them all pretty with the smaller branches.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yikes.
So you can make your bushes look like vaginas. I've been watching What We Do in the Shadows.
You can trim your bush, but be careful of the tree. Anyway.
Too bad you're too far away for me to high five that.
Virtual five.
Virtual five. Smack. Set it up and you landed it.
There you go. Thank you. That's how we work.
My train of thought's derailed now. Thanks, guys.
No problem.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, we need to... I want more with, like, yeah, the inspector, but I want it... I'm just wondering if the inspector... This is why I was kind of frustrated. I didn't quite... Couldn't make heads or tails of him. I don't know why he never suspected him, but I also don't know why he couldn't figure out weird stuff was happening at the cemetery. He's not a very good inspector, but I don't know what the deal is.
I kind of... like the fact that these people don't behave normally.
Yeah.
Like, especially when it comes to his interactions, which does make me feel like this microcosm that he lives in is self-induced.
Yeah.
At least somewhat. Nagi's the question mark there.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the movie, they basically switch places.
Well, you could get into the whole metaphysical thing where they're different parts of his personality, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Or you can get to the whole point where Nagi is actually running the whole show, because at one point he puts that skull together in like 20 seconds.
Let's figure this out here, because if Francesco, he's all...
impulse and passion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's super ego.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just ego, but he's super ego. Yeah. where Nagi's very much this passive id, if you want to put it in
the who does all the work.
So they very all very well could be the doctor who doesn't snip his member. It's the back of his mind that self-preservation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of don't do this stupid thing.
Well, you can even take it a little bit further because you think about how they live too, right? He lives upstairs in the nice-ish house, yeah. And Nagi is pushed down underground
under the floorboards. Yeah,
right. So it's a reasonable thought, at least, right? That they are the two sort of primary aspects of his personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think you could also put also on Nagi a certain aspect of his conscience because Nagi isn't the kind of a violent killer, and he does throw the gun away at the end.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of, and he is like, your conscience is kind of in the back of your head. Mm-hmm. Is that little nagging voice?
Well, yeah, and
the Nagi nagging voice. Ooh,
oh, and these mandrake roots that are raising the dead are these memories that keep coming back to haunt him, possibly. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're putting it in a cycle,
then we definitely are in a purgatory scenario, I think, maybe, because all these dead, he knows, maybe it's just...
Yeah, and when he is having a happy moment, when he falls in love, that's when something beautiful happens with the will-o'-the-wisp type of lights that form around him before and during that sex scene, and we really don't see much of them after that because things start spiraling into negativity.
That's right.
And that's when the dead come back with more frequency. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love when he's just sitting at his desk and shooting this line coming through the door.
Yeah. Oh, I love how...
just all lining up to get him.
Oh, Naki's there. He comes in the door, and then, like, he kind of... There's one that tries to get in, so he, like, hits it with the door, and he's like, look. And he's, like, shoots him. He's like, good.
I'm liking the whole idea that we have here already. It's already there.
Yeah, and then that might be the actual intention of the film, and I love that it doesn't hit you over the head with it, as at least
with
literally.
Many disembodied heads.
Yeah, with the shovel.
As maybe. You have to hit them over the head to get rid of them.
And there's even more parallels, because these returned, or returners, always seem to come after Francesco as well.
Yes.
Right? They always go to the house.
They never try
to leave. Well, except the mayor.
But when Valentina comes back, she's not aggressive to Nagi at all.
No.
Claudio doesn't do anything aggressive to Magda. I think that was Magda.
Well, no, he does try to eat her.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, does he?
He's eating me.
But
it's what I want.
But we don't know what's going on there, that it's aggressive, until Francesco shows up as well.
Well, she is covered in blood.
Well, it's the cat scenario. She's neither alive nor dead until Francesco looks in the box.
Yes.
Oh, she's going to be dead.
She's going to be dead. I believe she was always going to be dead. She's self-destructive in and of itself.
Yeah. Well, there's that too. Yeah.
So, and I mean, that could be part of his psyche, right? Mm-hmm. That's self-destructive. And it's he kind of deals with that by letting this event happen, right? In his subconscious.
And, you know, Valentina's father, the mayor, really was never aggressive either. He climbed a ladder.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah.
I'm not even sure what he was trying to do.
He was trying to get out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because he wanted to go back and be mayor.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Which is just like, it's part of this. It's like these ids of some of these things. They wanted to do what they used to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. That focus, that one mind. Yeah.
Like, I would have expanded Claudio just a little bit.
And that makes sense with Claudio then, that if he's just using her, well, he's just using her for sustenance now.
Yeah, he's just using her all over the place.
Yeah. So where she's willing to give everything to him to be with him.
Yeah, which is dumb.
Yeah.
But then at the end, he puts him back in the same grave because he's like, you know what? I don't care what he wants, but she wants to be together, so you know, fuck you.
The literal physical metaphors in this movie, and I adore them.
And I think I kind of had a whole idea, like I want to kind of expand some of the Claudio stuff. Like, I didn't want him to get caught so quickly. I want kind of Claudio to be a bit of a thorn for some of the movie.
Oh, yeah, I think he should be recurring theme, or at least once he escapes on his motorcycle and it's a bit of, oh shit, almost got him, and maybe he has to set up something a little more elaborate rather than like when they're literally necking biting the neck of her and accidentally shoots both of them. Maybe he has to set up some elaborate trap. Like, I was thinking, and it may be a little tropey, but set up that razor wire for the motorcycle just at head height.
Yeah.
Nice. And you know what we can do? We can do some expansion with Magda and like that self-destructive attitude where like as those two recur, parts of her are starting to go missing. Like the bottom half of her leg, the top half of the first part of her arm.
As we keep seeing her.
Yeah. As we keep seeing her, which would make sense that she is just so self-destructive. And I kind of, when we're talking about how these are all aspects of Francesco, I could kind of see Claudio being as who he used to be, like as a young man who would just use women. And that's where that attitude comes from. That's why Claudio doesn't get killed right away.
Yeah. Or it's also kind of a wishful thinking kind of thing as well. It's like, I wish I had the confidence to be more of a Lothario and take advantage of women the way he does, but I can't. I'm not built that way.
Right? Yeah. I don't know. I think I liked the idea that maybe his...
But I think a combination of those two personalities,
but
I
want it to
really
like
well.
Be like his impotence in this realm of existence is sort of a punishment for his Lothario-ism prior.
Yeah, I think all these characters are aspects of his personality.
And
the more we talk about it, the more I like that idea.
And Valentina as well as sort of how his kindness towards Nagi, like his, how he likes Nagi better than anybody else in town. Yeah.
Well, and there's also that flip side of it too, where Nagi is the romantic side of him.
Yes, right? True.
Right, so he's kind of feeding that romantic side to sort of keep it suppressed.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, if that movie had been an American movie, they might have done it. They might have hammered it a little more home, but you know, when that final scene and then they go into the snow globe, might have panned out a little further. Snow globe sitting on a desk next to the hospital bed that Francesco is in, in a coma or something. Like, that's what I feel like that this is all happening.
Yeah, and that's
coming to
see. I would have
terms with all the aspects and negative and positive aspects.
But
of
see, I wouldn't want it to be Franco. Funnily enough, I'd want it to be Nagi. And Nagi's like, yes, Doctor Thomas, can we send in your next patient?
Well, and you might be onto something there, because at the end of the movie, once Nagi comes back after being knocked unconscious,
yeah, he's not dead. He's just accident,
like he's really hurt, but he comes back, he throws away the gun, and for the first time we hear him speak in a tone that we can understand. He's like, I'd like to go back home now.
Yes.
And for the first time it is Francesco that doesn't have the voice anymore, and he says nah, which is exactly what Nagi would say. So Francesco could have always been the personality of Nagi, and now that sweet personality has taken control of
this
world.
He's the one in charge.
Well, and that makes sense, because you could have somebody who's less attractive wanting to be this attractive person.
Oh, absolutely. Like, when you visualize what you would like to look like.
Yeah.
I know, I'm a girl. I would love to look like Rupert Vibber. Because he looks great in this movie.
The doctor feels like somebody who's a doctor that a regular person doesn't understand what doctors do.
Yes.
Yes.
The mayor is the authority figure, and sometimes we find that they don't have a moral. They just want to be in power.
Oh, also the cynicism of power.
The cynicism of power
and the absurdity of the idea that he would dig up his own daughter for sympathy votes.
Yeah. Right? You know, the sexual confidence of Claudio, the I don't give a shit attitude of Francesco.
Yeah.
Like, there's no real consequence to anything he does, and it doesn't feel like he's like, that didn't go my way. Well.
And she, who keeps showing up consistently in his life, like
and she always looks the same.
The variations of somebody you
that
could love.
Lost love, yeah. But maybe you shouldn't.
But you messed up each and every time, probably, because you... And it also stands to think where she is just sort of... She's not a rounded character at any of these things. She's like a caricature. So when you think of somebody that you could love, like putting all this stuff onto them, that's not really them. They're not a human person.
The her is more of the carnal desire, whereas the more proper woman that you could have an actual relationship with was Valentina.
Yeah, but it's true. And it's like, but Valentina has a voice.
Yeah,
but no body.
No body. She is there's an intellectual and a personality part to her, whereas she doesn't really have that much personality, essentially.
She is carnal desire, because I mean, she is gorgeous. And that is very deliberate, and the more we talk about it, it makes sense.
It's someone he wants to have sex with, but he doesn't really think about a relationship. If we're honest, he thinks this is what love is.
Yeah. Man, we would never come up with this 25 years ago.
No. No.
We've had a lot of experience. We've made the many mistakes.
Yes. Yes, yes, we have.
I mean, like I said, there's some aspects in there we probably won't understand, the very Italian things that it might be making commentary to that I can't relate to. But as far as the psychological aspects of these characters in here, it does explain why they don't act normally. No. I mean, really, that crowd of kids we don't hear a lot of, and even when they're teasing him, I'm not sure if you're quite making it out. You just get the feeling he's embarrassed by whatever is coming out of their mouths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just there in that scene to sort of establish that they mock him and do make fun of him.
Yeah, like he's terrified of these.
Yeah,
right. The childlike truth that's coming
this
from
is
him.
This is the trauma coming from childhood abuse, possibly.
Yes. Or it's
or
just,
other children bullying from when you were a kid.
Or it's just that voice in your head that. Where you're always doubting yourself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That self-esteem issue.
That self-esteem issue. Yeah. So, and it's the, especially if you're isolated, that worry of what the world thinks of you, which is why he doesn't go out in the world very much. Because that's that representation of what he thinks of the world and what they are to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on to something. I'm not sure how you put that into film, but...
I know, we've come up with a concept.
I feel like we've more... Like, we've dissected this movie, and as far like I think so much of it works really well, and I love the fact that you can sit there and think about it, talk about it, and sticks with you. And I don't like a movie that spoon feeds you everything we just said.
No, and I think really all we need to do is develop some of those characters a little bit more.
Yeah,
right. Like
develop them into those archetypes of a personality.
Yes. That's right.
If we're working off that roadmap of a psyche. Then I think that smooths out the plan.
Exactly. And just like you said, set them up a little bit earlier in the film. Mm-hmm. Get rid of the Franco scene at the beginning, mm-hmm. right? And have it more happen in town. Mm-hmm. Right? That visit to towns establishes all of the interactions that happen later on in the movie mm-hmm. through his interactions with them as he goes through town.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the outset, you're introducing these characters.
Yeah, you need to see them all right away. And it doesn't have to be in like this logical way, because this is a town that exists in his head, so it's not form-related quite right. Like, it should be a bit dreamlike.
Yes.
Yes.
In its dream presentation. Logic. Yeah. You know, I think of, maybe we'll cover it one day, the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, and how that village is angular and doesn't look right, because it is a dream.
Oh, and the streets that don't make sense. I want streets that don't make sense where you're like, well, no, that if you do turn right, you should be here, not there. Like,
And
they give us that at the end, kind of.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that cemetery is up on a hill above everything else.
Yeah.
So this is the center of whatever the turmoil is in his head.
Yeah, I think we may have figured out what it's happening in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that does set up like that possible sequel, like, okay, unfortunately, if you do sequelize this movie, you kind of have to answer the question of what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And if this is all happening in his head, if it's a dream, or if he's in a coma and existing in his own purgatory, do we see that character live or die?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or do we continue on because we figured out it's not Francesco who's the central personality, but Nagi. So now we see Nagi start taking control of... and bringing all this guilt and all of these aspects
under control.
Under control. And then only then does that road exist out of town.
Yeah.
And you can also answer the question of like, leave the dead alone. Well, that's the whole point. He's in purgatory, so there aren't his dead.
Yeah.
They're just memories, and they're people who were just sort of...
Well, and this is a great analogy for just sort of not beating yourself up over your own mistakes.
And we didn't touch on, there's a little lady that visits the grave of her husband, and just a sweet lady.
Yeah.
And
like, they're every day.
Caretakers are very familiar with her. She asks them, like, oh, which one should I have on my gravestone? And it's a bit of a sad day when he does come across her gravestone, and he's like, oh, when did that happen?
Well, when he was sick because he had that big shot in his dick.
Oh, yeah. But he's actually upset about that.
And you know what? She's his hope.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, hope died.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's what she is.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, if we're continuing the sort of these analogies, she is unquestionably like his optimism.
Well, and his hope for connection of any kind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
like a proper connection with a real human person.
Yeah.
Because that's when he really goes off the rails, is after she dies.
Yeah.
And he sort of talks to her like a person, yeah, like not like some of these archetypes. Like he genuinely has an interest, like he'll talk to her.
Maybe this is a representation of the real world, his mother, his grandmother.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, certainly that she would be represented by somebody that he cared about when he was younger, for sure.
And that, now that we've created these characters to be aspects of personalities, I think that explains at least some of their weirdness. Yes.
Odd behavior.
Certainly you wouldn't lay that out in the film for the audience to figure out, but that's half the fun, is why this sticks with you, is you want to figure it out and you want to know why it is the way it is. Yeah. I might wind up rewatching some of these other weird movies and try to figure them out. Mandy, what the fuck is that movie about? I don't know yet.
There's so many movies where I've watched them a number of times and I'm like, I still don't know, but I'm going to damn well try.
And I'm going to watch again to get some help.
Yeah. Well, hey, it only took us 25 years to figure this goddamn thing out. And I'm not even sure we did.
But. I'm not sure we did, but I like the way we did figure it out.
Yeah.
Whether it's right or wrong doesn't matter to me.
What we want to do with it is how we figured it out. Like, and we wouldn't change much. We just expand the caricatures.
Yeah. Maybe drop in just a few more clues as to what is actually happening there without spoon-feeding it.
Yeah. Yes. In hindsight, you know, I might not have remade this film if Rupert Everett himself didn't want to remake this film.
Yeah.
So, like, he clearly thinks this movie is a great movie that more people should see.
Yes.
It's just too bad somebody out there hasn't made it available for people to see, because it's still, 25 years later, really hard to see.
Yes.
And I have to say, like, there's parts of this movie where the protagonist is so reprehensible, but because Rupert Everett is just going so well with it,
he kind of really gets you past it. Yeah, you really enjoy his death sprees. You know, his killing sprees are really amusing.
Yeah, for a character that's kind of lacking personality, he's very charismatic. It's kind of a really, really weird juxtaposition.
I think it's because there's a kindness in the tone of his voice.
Yeah.
This British softness that comes through, and there is enough of something in there that you cling on to.
Yes. Well, and his kindness to the people who treat him well.
Yeah.
Right? Like his kindness to Noggy and his kindness to the lady who comes to the cemetery every day. Mm-hmm. Even his kindness to Valentina after she's just ahead.
Mm-hmm.
He has kindness in him that allows you to get past
his
murderousness.
Right after, and this is what happens, it happens directly after the murder spree, where he's trimming stuff around there, and there's a nest of baby birds, and he's trimming around them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, you don't know, there's so many bits where I'm like, I don't quite know what to make of him, but it's because it's Rupert Everett, I'm letting a lot slide.
No, he's a little more complex than we've roadmapped here, but that, I think, Noggy and Francesco are the core personalities within whatever's going on.
So they must be the most complex ones.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're the ones we're going to see the most, so they need to be less of a caricature of these personalities. But it is interesting that you can strip away aspects of these characters and everything kind of still works.
Yeah. It definitely still kind of works. But yeah, I don't know what else we could do aside from, like I said, trimming one scene, maybe filling out a few more, like you said, with Carlos.
Yeah, I would just introduce those characters a little earlier so they don't feel so thrust upon you and make it feel, because it does feel like, okay, now it's time for the Claudio sketch, and now it's time for the Valentina sketch. And if we start interacting a little earlier with these characters, then it'll just flow more smoothly. But I think, generally speaking, I like what they already did.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you're just kind of perfecting what's already great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you could have some fun too with having, especially considering Valentina and Carlos would be out at the same time. You could have sort of a sub story there where Carlos is really trying to get Valentina back.
Do you mean Claudio?
Claudio, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Sorry. I was like, Carlos, which one was he?
Yeah. Sorry.
Because some of the names flew past me.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, if you're Americanizing this, you're probably going to be
Carlos.
Yeah. You're going to make these names a little more identifiable to a global market, so they're going to be a little more simplified. Franco will be Frank, although we might have changed it entirely because we could technically have two Franks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was kind of telling in and of itself.
Actually, yes. Francesco and Franco. He's basically talking to himself.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, essentially.
Yeah, the one part of his personality that's willing to take responsibility and mm-hmm. the one that isn't.
Yes.
The one that had the things he wanted and threw it away.
Well, again, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ugh, but the one that so also deep. Suffered from some of like his worst impulses.
Yeah. So, so deep. Wow. I think it's time to do some recasting. Trish, why don't you start us out?
Okay, I can do so. I didn't cast everybody because, again, I didn't know what to do with most of this. But yeah, now that we've kind of done this, I think my Franco will work because I'm going to have Francesco and Franco as the same person. But because we won't really see him, he'll be a voice.
Mm-hmm.
It can be doable.
Yeah, especially if he can manipulate his voice to sound a little bit differently.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, if he goes visit Franco in the hospital and it looks like him and he doesn't recognize himself.
Yes.
I like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've already sort of established like the Nagi character. Like, who would you imagine yourself to be? Like the more like gorgeous? Of course you would. Yeah.
Well, on top of that, when they says, I don't know you. Well, in the hospital bed.
Yeah.
That's another telling factor too, right? They, neither of them knows each other.
Nope. Yeah. So good. So yeah, like Francesca, well, we can do this is Robert Sheehan from Misfits.
I was looking at him.
But I also had like kind of Joseph Gilgan. So like if we're doing still a Franco-Francesco thing,
yeah.
they could be aspects of each other. Because sure. Joseph Gilgan, he's an interesting looking fellow. I find him very fascinating to look at.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He could be it as well.
Yeah. And Sheehan would be great Sheehan's a for dead something. Ringer. Weird here, so
yeah, he specializes in weird.
Yeah,
and the charm that like he can do such stupid things and still be fucking charming.
Yep.
So he's got it.
I almost did him as my Claudio, but he's a little too old for that role now. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did do a Claudio, but like yeah, I think my Claudio's a little bit older, so I might leave that. My Nagi, Zach Gottsagen, he was in the Peanut Butter Falcon.
Okay. An actor I don't know in a movie I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But, I love but the title like he's of it. he's an actual like sort of a special needs person. So it's like going if we're going to go there,
okay. Sure.
And have him also be the intelligent portion of it.
Right. I understand now.
Okay, and then the woman, I just put woman cuz rather than she, Samantha Robinson from The Love Witch.
Okay.
Cuz she's nice. Got that ethereal.
Oh, I like that.
Look to her.
I don't know why I didn't think of that right away.
And then I also was thinking, like, because we sort of gone that way, there's going to be maybe more of an interaction of death, but I'm not going to have it be, like, just a statue. And I went with Antonia Thomas for death.
Mm.
And then my Claudia was Nathan Stewart Jarrett, who was also in Misfits. Because I was like, Claudio Carlos, if we're Americanizing it, I think he still works. Mm. And then I couldn't figure out what to do for, like, the woman, because I was like, I didn't know if I would even keep her. So I'll have to figure out something else for her later.
Okay.
But now that she's going to be riding around the bike slowly losing her body, I think it's going to be quite interesting. And I'm like, who could really lose parts of her body and it would be okay? Like
yeah.
Somebody who would just go crazy for somebody. You know what? I think Zoe Kravitz can really nail that role, like be like nice. So super passionate.
I almost used her in mine as well, so we're on similar trains.
And then my director, I went with Anna Biller, who did The Love Witch, because I'm like, if I'm going to homage the Giallo-esque, she knows how to ape style just flawlessly.
No, that's a very good choice.
Awesome. So that's my casting.
Cool. What do you got, Sam?
Okay. Let's take a look here. So for my Francesco / Franco, I went with Matthew Lewis because he kind of looks like Rupert Everett.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. From, right. He was
Neville Longbottom.
Neville Longbottom, yeah. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, where he's now...
he'd be about the right age for that. Yeah.
That's exactly what
there's now the word of longbottoming, which is to get really hot after you're an awkward child.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought he'd be fun to sort of see in that role for sure. For my Nagi, I went with Haley Joel Osment.
Ooh.
Right, because I was going to make him less learning disabled, right? It's more of a sort of a mute introvert kind of person.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, like my Nagi's not going to be like as mute, but like to have the learning disabled person be the intelligent ego.
Yeah, and I like that given what we've done with it, I actually do like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
For she or the woman, I went with Zazie Beetz.
Oh man, I'm so jealous.
Domino from the Deadpool movies.
And in Slice. Watch Slice with Zazie Beetz. She's awesome.
Yeah, so I thought she'd be great in that role. For the mayor, I went with Rupert Everett.
Yes.
I did too. I'll just put that out there right now.
Then I'll just put that there.
Yeah.
And then the only person I cast was a doctor, because those were the sort of the five major characters to me, the ones that he interacted with the most. And I didn't do the inspector, I should have. But for my doctor, this actually works really well with the subconscious. It went very stereotypical because the doctor is going to be Asian, played by an actor named B.D. Wong.
Oh, like B.D. Wong.
I love B.D. Wong. B.D. Wong. Sorry.
If he can like his white rose thing from Mr. Robot would totally work as a doctor.
It totally would. So, and of course, that's that sort of stereotype that a lot of doctors are Asian, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be fun to play into those stereotypes a little bit if we're going into his subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you maybe tweak the casting a little bit to have that happen.
Nice.
I had a different thought, but in a similar vein. Was that all of you guys?
Oh, am I director?
Yeah.
I went with Robbie Pickering, who directed Freaks of Nature.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, because he handles the comedy really well.
Yeah.
And the weirdness.
And does great story.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
All right. For my Francesco, I wanted somebody who had a similar smoothness to him, a similar Britishness to him,
but
could still pull off the comedy. Jack Whitehall from Good Omens.
Yeah.
Oh,
little shorter, but I think he's got the right look.
But
and personality.
I've been watching stuff with Jack Whitehall and his dad, and if we have to have so much sex in it with Jack Whitehall, that's going to be classic.
For my Nagi, I went with Matt Lucas. You might remember him from Little Britain. He was in the Peter Capaldi era of Doctor Who.
And Bridesmaids.
And Polar. Bridesmaids.
Yeah.
And Polar, most recently on Netflix.
And in Alice in Wonderland, he was the Toon Twin.
The Dumb and Dumber?
Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Tweedledum, yeah. So, like, he's perfect, Nagi, I think. For my she, the woman, the love interest that keeps coming back over and over and over again, the mistake that keeps repeating itself, Rosie Huntington-Whiteley.
Yes.
She hasn't done a ton. She is a model turned actress. She was in Mad Max Fury Road as one of the brides. She was in the third Transformers movie.
Yes. The much maligned third Transformers movie, yes.
Well, they're all maligned in my mind.
They are, but I mean...
Except for Bumblebee.
She's not as bad as everybody thought she was in that.
No, well, I mean, there's one thing they know.
She's one of the better parts of that movie. I'm just going to say that.
it's
a shitty movie, and she's one of the better parts.
Yeah, they do know how to find, like, ridiculously hot actresses. So I think she's got the look of that character that Carnal Desire might represent.
Yeah.
For Valentina, I went with Margaret Qualley. She was most recently in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She was the girl that got picked up at the bus stop. She was one of the Manson girls.
Okay.
She played Pussycat.
Okay. I haven't seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but I've seen the trailer.
It's fantastic. She's fantastic. Check it out. For the mayor, as I said, at least mayor number one. I called him mayor number one, Rupert Everett. For mayor number two, just because I wanted to tie to other weird movies, I went. And this started developing an idea where if you're creating personalities, you might associate it with pop culture.
Ooh.
So mayor number two is Nicolas Cage from Mandy. Considering he likes to, as he's getting older, he is leading ladies of getting younger. which makes it really good for how that movie goes later.
Yeah.
For Magda, the girl who has fallen in love with Claudio and is pining over his grave, Esme Creed from the Hannah television show on Amazon.
Okay. Hmm.
For Claudio, I went with KJ Apa from Riverdale.
Okay.
Archie. For the detective investigator, especially the way he looks right now, Al Pacino.
Yeah. I want him, and then I want him to like channel Columbo, but like a bad Columbo.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, no, like, oh, thank God you've got a gun, you can defend yourself. All right, I'm gonna go upstairs.
Now, I kind of like the idea of Franco being the same actor as Francesco, but I didn't go that way because I didn't think of it until we did this. So I did Richard Iolotti.
There we go.
Oh, nice. Absolutely.
For the doctor, And I just really liked the juxtaposition of this, a really competent doctor on television normally, to a not so competent one in this one. You want to say it with me?
Hugh Laurie.
House. And like
as soon
I said,
as you said that, I was like, ooh.
These aspects are starting to being pulled from pop culture, even though they're representing
yes.
personalities. They're something they associate with off of modern
Love
television.
Love how that works. Love it.
Yeah. And Death, just because he's got a good voice, the voice of Benedict Cumberbatch, because
nice. Why not?
Why not? Why not? For my director, I went with Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Mm. Sam will love this. He directed Delicatessen, Emily, yep. and City of Lost yes. Children.
Yep, yep, yep.
A very good choice, especially if you want to catch the mood, because City of Lost Children is just... You want to talk moody? Holy shit!
Yeah, and sense of humor yeah. that Amelie. So he's good at
and
creating
visually Amelie,
and he's very good at visual style, very good at comedy and moodiness.
Yes. And Delicatessen is gross in some parts. He's totally nailed.
Yeah,
it.
So like he represented all the aspects that this movie has.
Yes.
As a director to me.
Yeah.
So it was just I might have not even come up with it if we didn't have an actor already in it from City of Lost Children. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that guy would be amazing on this movie. So
love it.
Yeah. So that's what I got.
Nice.
No, I like everybody kind of came at this with swinging with the cast. So.
Yeah.
You guys did more than I did, but I love like the idea of the doctor and like as we've expanded it, there's just so much.
Initially, when I watched the film, I only wrote down two names. Then I came back the next day and I started adding like, well, who are central characters and why are they there? Why are they central? And then psychological aspects started popping in my brain a little bit, but not to the extent that we did it in this episode. But yeah. I liked how it all worked out.
Yeah, no, and I just was with the ones that had the most screen time because there are so many people in this movie.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not actually a lot of people, but
especially when one is just recurring.
There's only two that have any real... Well, three that have any real kind of time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So...
Because even the woman doesn't.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, but she reoccurs multiple times as different characters.
Yeah.
So she is very important.
Yeah.
But, you know, initially, when I just casual casting, I'm like, well, I only have to cast three people. The rest are inconsequential. But no, they're not.
No, especially
so
now.
Once I kind of revisit it and had a night to sleep on it and just think about it a little bit, I'm like, oh, yeah. There's a reason why they're all there. And it's important. And the more we talked about it, the more important they came. So I'm glad I kind of dived into it as heavy as I did.
I know. I'm sort of jealous. I'm like, oh, man, if I'd known about this, I would have been...
I struggled with it as I went along.
I did struggle because I was like, that's why I kind of stopped where I stopped, because I'm like, I'm going to keep struggling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so good.
Yeah, especially if we're fleshing them out a little bit, having them show up a little bit more often, showing up earlier. Mm-hmm. They do need to be more thought out for casting, for sure.
Nice.
Well, I don't think we remade it as much as... I guess we smoothed it out a little bit. Yeah.
I would
made
say
it. I like the fact that we just made it made sense to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I got to take away the he raped me and it's fine. I just don't like that.
Yeah, that one
that
doesn't
makes
fly,
me upset.
So.
But I think what we could do with that one is it's not that the mayor raped me. It's not that whole thing. It's like she's just not. Oh, well, maybe she's just gay, and that's the whole point.
Well,
she doesn't want a man.
I mean,
she doesn't want a penis.
Well, I mean, it could be just the fact that. Maybe she did have sex, but she did. Yeah, she didn't. She stuck with the whole "I don't want a penis" thing, but realized why.
Why? Yes, yeah. That's the whole thing. Like that's why the penis has to go. It's like, oh wait, no, yeah, because that's the
you
whole
know what?
Thing.
I feel like the mayor should be female.
Yeah,
the second mayor.
Second mayor. Yeah.
Yeah, the second mayor should be female, and the whole thing is like maybe
bye-bye,
that's
Nick.
The point. And I mean, I think you could love someone even though they aren't the sex you normally go. But the sex part is off the table because. Yeah. You can't, you don't feel like that. Mm-hmm. Everything else is fine, but just the,
Yeah, this constant rejection from his carnal desire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I think you can have, like, a soulmate and a love of your life, and they just might not be the right sex this go-round, if you look reincarnation-wise.
When you think about it, the first time is, was she really in love with him? Or just the fact that she was in love with death and it made her really horny?
Yeah.
Right.
The second time...
She's goth to the extreme.
Yeah, the second time... She was just at odds with her personality and he was safe.
Yeah.
And then she discovered why.
Why?
And the third time was just taking advantage of him.
Yes.
Yep.
So it never really works out with this carnal desire.
No.
No, it definitely doesn't. And it doesn't in the original movie by any means.
No, right? Not at all.
And maybe that's the whole point. Like just this carnal desire, like looking because he can't look beyond the surface, it's all going to go tits up because mm-hmm. he has to fall in love with the person, not that just desire.
Exactly.
Like, that simple desire is not going to be enough.
Yeah.
Ever. Yay! We did it!
Well, if nothing else, I feel we unlocked this thing. And for the most part, I think it all really works. And
yeah.
In an era that has Mandy now with the cult following and Bliss, I think this movie's got a really good shot at finding at least a mm-hmm. cult audience. The problem is, will it get any bigger than it already is? Like, is yeah. this worth remaking? Is the audience big enough to remake this movie?
Well, I think right now we're, like you say, your friends were like into this and the oddness. Audiences are more into, they want more nuance. Mm.
I don't think this would be, at least with
what we've done, they'd love.
Yeah, I think at this point, I can't see this getting much of outside of festival release. Mm. Like, commercial releases right now, they're big, flashy, sci-fi, fantasy adventure films, and if it doesn't have a cape, it doesn't sell. But
streaming,
you know, Smart Horror has been doing really well, though.
Smart Horror has been doing well. I think a good home for this would be like Shudder, Amazon, mm-hmm. Netflix are having really good luck doing offbeat movies right now.
Yeah.
And Smart Horror does pretty good as well, but it still tends to be not in that weird category. Like, and I'd hate to take the weirdness out of this movie.
No, it has to be there because that's what makes it so charming.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so wild. And there's so many, you could have so much more fun with the visuals nowadays. Like, mm-hmm. but I also like to have a lot of it practical.
Yeah. And they did a good job with the practical effects. There's a few mm-hmm. moments where it's like, ooh, that's not
yeah,
so good.
Yeah, with the wisps, they just look like marshmallows on fire.
Yeah. 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 On strings.
On strings. Absolutely on strings. I think Death looked fantastic when it came to life.
The disembodied head.
That looked all right. Some of the more gory aspects don't quite come off as well as I would have liked, but they're still kind of gross. Yeah. At the same time, but you know, they did pretty good with what they had.
Yeah.
And this was a case like of a modern movie like that I loved called Bliss. Mm-hmm. And you can hear me talk about that in our 31 Days of Horror.
Yeah.
Another weird movie, and at times the gore effects don't feel like the big budget stuff mm-hmm. does. But you get to the point, you get it, it's gross. Nonetheless, it just doesn't quite come off as convincingly as it should.
But
and I feel like this one is kind of like that, too. It's just not not quite there. That looked like a bag full of Jell-O and blood.
Yeah.
But again, if you're doing something, again, that to me, that sort of fed into the whole surrealist of it. This isn't really real, so it shouldn't look real.
And that's true.
Yeah.
You know, again, that cartoony aspect might lend itself to the weirdness.
Yeah, and to the whole theory that it's psychological, it's in his head,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the things you dream or see in your subconscious very rarely look the way they would in real life.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. You get the weirdness where you're like, well, yeah, just the oddest stuff will come in and out, and you don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this movie felt very much like that.
It does, you know. So if this is some weird fever dream of his, I'm all for another one.
Yes.
Remake's going to be tough to hit the same notes in the heights that I feel this one did.
Mm-hmm.
But if they kind of stick with it, you get the right performers,
mm-hmm.
I think you might have something special there.
Absolutely.
Hopefully somebody will give this movie a wider release because the likelihood of it actually getting remade are pretty slim.
Slim to none, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, unless, of course, again, a bigger release when people come to rediscover this many years later, then maybe that's what it would take to get it remade.
Mm.
Who knows? Can't do it with what's on this.
Yeah, like, who knows? Maybe because of this podcast,
yes.
you will go seeking out this movie and demanding this movie be re-released so you can actually see the damn thing.
Yes, please.
So, who knows? But this was a fun one for us. I really like, and this is one of our deeper ones, too. Mm. Deeper discussions and gone in places we don't normally go.
We don't normally get to.
No.
Yeah, because let's face it, most movies that we watch don't get into this kind of deep psychological territory.
But honestly, it's easier to do this with you guys, because sometimes like I might have a hint of what's going on. But until I discuss it with you, it's like, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense now.
Yeah.
It didn't at at the time.
And, yeah, and that's why this probably wouldn't work if it was just one guy orating. So
no.
This group consciousness that comes together deciphering this thing in the writer's room on the mothership of Invasion of the Remake.
Yeah, I'm glad I picked this one because I remember your first thing was, oh, that's going to be tough.
I wasn't wrong.
No, you weren't wrong. You were not wrong.
No, but untangling the mystery is sometimes nicer because it's like going, I didn't know, like, I know I felt something. And you're like, you say this movie sticks with you, but I didn't know why.
No, I didn't know either. No. I'm not sure I still do.
Yeah.
Like, these are all theories and things we're trying to decipher this, but I'm interested in our audience's thought of what this movie might be about.
Yeah, have you seen it?
Have you seen this movie? If you have, you know, let us know on our social media, at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. Send us a message. And a shout out to Eston, U.S. Postal Service man who has to listen to a lot of music and podcasts to get him through the day, and sent us a really nice email just a couple weeks ago.
Aww.
And well, it was about a few days ago as of this recording, but it'll be a couple weeks by the time you hear this. And thank you, Eston, for that wonderful email. Shout out to you, and thanks for getting my Amazon packages to me.
We're glad we could be with you on your travels.
Yeah, he also sent us a request, and I'm going to try to get that. It's actually a good one. It's one I hummed and hawed about whether it is or it isn't a remake, but I think it'll just be a fun one to do.
Yay.
We'll
try to get that out there for him.
And next week's episode is technically not really a remake either, so.
No. Next week, I don't think I'm spoiling anything for anybody on this one. I'm not going to tell you exactly what it is, but if you've listened to episode 23 and episode 123, because this is episode 222, so this might tie into 23 and 123 being 223.
Mm-hmm.
Completing a trilogy, if you will, of comparisons that you have demanded of us. You are invading audience. When we did episode 23, you requested us to keep going. So we did it again. And we're going to round out this trilogy, and hopefully we'll never have to come back to it again.
Not for the show, anyhow.
Yeah, at least not in the context of stealth remake by making the same movie but naming the character something else.
Which, yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say,
save it. We'll save it for next week. But our eagle-eyed listeners, if you're just joining us, at least you know what to reference, and you can go back and listen to those two episodes before next week. And if you've been with us for a while, you know what's coming next week for sure.
Yes, you do.
And make sure if your friends haven't hopped on already, that might be a good time to hop on. Tell them about the show. Tell them where to find the show. Direct them to our social media where our link tree is, and it'll link you to all sorts of platforms. We're on all the major platforms, so just search us out. Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and even
freaking YouTube.
So help them get their
earballs
on the show. All right, well, that was Cemetery Man.
Yes, it was.
1994. Yes. It was a thing. It was a film. It was a film that will always sit in the back of my brain as this great and possibly the weirdest movie I've ever seen and actually liked.
Yes. There's that really great qualifier there.
We have seen weird movies that I hate.
Yes.
Yes.
Or I'm ambivalent about, but this is the greatest weird movie I've ever seen.
This one will stick with you. It really will. I don't know. There's something about it.
Yeah. And maybe it's those nagging psychological aspects that are back there. I don't know if they're purposeful or not, but, I mean, maybe we're reading too much into this movie, and maybe it's not as deep as we give it credit for, but
we would choose to believe that it is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Hey, and what would be the greatest thing in the world if a movie was unintentionally deep?
Yeah. I mean, Rupert Everett himself, you can find it on YouTube, a little interview. It was about 4 or 5 minutes of him talking about Delamore. And he says, it's the weirdest movie I ever saw. I'm like, maybe you should have said, and in.
Yes. He's so detached from it, he doesn't recognize it.
Exactly.
He's so young in this. He really is.
He's a youngster.
He really is. That's why we made him the mayor, because he should be in it again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's it. I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we will rise again. We are out of here.
Don't leave me alone now. Nagi. Nagi. Oh, God. Death. Death. Death comes sweeping down. Filthy death, the leering clown. Death on wings, death by surprise. Veiling evil from worldly eyes. Death that's born as life succumbs. While death and love, two kindred drums, beat the time to judgment day. An actor in a passionate play, without beginning, without end, evermore. Amen.